some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Hello. Welcome to Beer Sessions on the Heritage Radio Network. Beer Sessions is brought to you by the Good Beer Seal, an association of New York bars that serve, promote, and support good craft beer. If you are looking for good craft beer, look for the Good Beer Seal and check out our website at www.goodbeerseal.com for links to Good Beer Seal bar members, events, and craft beer news. I'm your host, Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and my co-host tonight is Ray Dieter, owner of DBA bars in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and New Orleans. And joining Ray and me at the table are Justin Phillips of Beer Table and Chuck Duffney of Diesel Drafts. You can email questions, toasts, and beer lore to share with our beer experts at beersessions@gmail.com. Well, thanks for listening, and hopefully we have quite a good audience out there tonight. This is our first Beer Sessions show. Ray Dieter is a good friend and one of the deans of New York City Beer, and he's here with us tonight as a co-host. He's been in the business a long time, right? How long have you been doing this now?
Well, we opened up DBA in 1994.
1994. Wow.
Yeah.
And how would you characterize DBA?
Well, I would characterize DBA, the first DBA on First Avenue in the East Village, as a good bar, first and foremost. And that's what we always wanted to have. We wanted to have a bar that was just a good place to go to, down the street, a local, comfortable joint, a place that women would feel very comfortable in, and that just happened to have the best beer, the best spirits, best bourbons, best tequilas that was available at the time.
And why did you do that? Why didn't you just have some beer and some spirits?
Well, that's a good question. What we had to do, we had never been in the business before, and this landlord that we had wanted a business plan. So it's like, oh no, we have to put together a business plan now. And I had never put together a business plan before. So we needed a concept. And my business partner, Dennis Zentek, and I decided that we got drinking good stuff was the way to go. So we built it around drinking good stuff. And we put together a great list, and the concept was we're going to have the best beverages, the best beers, the best spirits, and we just sought them out, and we wanted to present them in a very unintimidating, unpretentious kind of environment, like I said, a local bar. And people said we were crazy. It's the East Village. People want to drink, you know, cheap beer, shots of Jack Daniels. And we thought, well, no, you know, that's maybe when you're 22, when you're fresh out of college. But, you know, now you're 30 years old, and maybe you got a paycheck coming in. And this is in the 90s, and people actually did have jobs back then. Remember those days when people actually worked for a living? That was a good time. It was good times. I remember those days. And people came in, and they paid cash for drinks. It was all crazy back then. Nobody used credit cards. And anyway, we decided to go with the high road, and that was our business plan. The landlord accepted it. And, of course, Dennis and I said, okay, if they don't go for this concept, we're going straight to Bud and Jack Daniels. We just want to stay open. But that never happened. It took off immediately.
Thankfully,
yes.
And I know you had some, you became friends with some importers like the Shelton Brothers.
Right, yeah.
How did you meet them?
Just through the business. I was fortunate enough to meet some great beer writers like Jim Leff and Dave Edelstein at the time. They're all working in the business. And they introduced me to a bunch of folks, and one of them being Dan Shelton, who I became really good friends with. And I've spent a lot of time in Europe with him, traveling around, going to different breweries in different countries and sampling some great beers, some really horrible beers too. Nobody talks about that part of the search, because when you're looking for good beer, you find a lot of bad beer too. But we shouldn't focus on that.
Well, we'll focus on the good beers.
Let's do that.
Well, let's talk about something really good that's happening in the world of beer. Eric Asimov, the New York Times wine and beer writer, has been writing a lot more about beer lately. And this past week, he did a short article about some of the better beers, many Belgian inspired. And I was very pleased to see that his number one beer was a Jolly Pumpkin beer, which is it sourced or imported by Dan Shelton? How do you describe that?
Yeah, well, it's one of
from Michigan. It's an American
beer. It's domestic, and I would guess sourced is the right word. I think Dan's crazy. We all know that. I mean, people listening outside who don't know Dan, he's out of his mind. And he does as much damage.
Listen, his beer was number one on Eric Asimov's list.
Right.
And apparently he was still upset that he didn't have every single beer on that list.
Someday we can do a show about Dan and the bridges he's burned over the years. And I've watched them flame out, too.
We love his beer. So we're here tonight with some of the guys. Chuck, who's a young brewer and beer enthusiast, he's going to pour us beers. And one of the things we do on the show is we get to drink beer. And we've got this, what is it, Jolly Pumpkin Oro de Calabaza, which was the number one beer on Eric Asimov's list.
Very nice.
Justin, you've been such a great fan of beer and expert and server. What do you think about this beer, the Jolly Pumpkin beers in general?
I think they're really interesting. I mean, one of the things that he's doing that's kind of... Yeah, I'll have a little more. one of the things that's kind of unusual.
Yes, we're drinking beer.
Everything he makes, he's maturing in old oak. I don't think he's using any new oak. I don't think he's using any stainless steel. I think that's pretty much unheard of anywhere that I know of, except for like in older traditions like lambic producers. So from that, I mean, of course, there's a lot of character that you're not going to see in other beers. Technically, I don't know a whole lot about what's happening, but I think they're really delicious, spicy, interesting bitterness. This one has kind of an unusual, like almost buttery quality to me. I don't know if you guys are picking up on that or not. But
so are all the Jolly Pumpkin beers, do they all have a sour finish?
I don't think they're all sour, but I mean, I think they all have the potential for that. And I think they're all conditioned in the bottle. I think they're all going to change over time. And a lot of them do have a really interesting tartness.
Yeah, I like them too. Some of the other beers he had on Eric Asimov's list, there were three beers from 12% Imports, which is a new importer.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys use him? Have you bought from him?
Not that much. I've met the guy, and I forget his name offhand.
Brian,
right.
Brian Ewing.
Really into it, and I've got to apologize. Brian, if you're listening, give me a call, because I want to talk to you.
Well, three of the beers on the list were from 12% Imports.
Yeah,
I know that.
Yeah. Brian's he's a good dude. He just started up a little over a year ago, and he's become a good friend. And I actually got to travel with him a little bit last year. And he's just out there really finding a lot of fun stuff that otherwise hasn't really been scoped out yet.
What do you guys, if you had to pick a favorite brewery in Europe, let's not think of the States, let's think of Europe, what would it be?
How many times does that question come up? What's your favorite brewery? What's your favorite beer? I mean, what mood are you in? What country are you in? I mean, if I'm in Germany, I got to say Mars.
Mars, I like
Mars. It's probably my favorite beer. But also, I mean, Jaeger Pilsner is, I think, a great session beer to drink. When I'm in England, I love Bateman's. I'm really thrilled that Bateman's is back in town. Bateman's was away for a long time. Always been one of my favorite beers.
I like his
Perrier
beers too.
From France is great.
Yeah, Mars is a great beer. They have a new beer out now. It's called the Safer. It's Safer hops. It's some kind of an unusual aromatic hop on their wheat beer. And you're expecting it to have some kind of bitterness, and it's very smooth and gentle. And I don't know. I love beer. Don't you guys love beer? I'm going to sing the song now. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
You know, back to the Mars Brewery, I had a great experience there. They have cask ale in Germany. And what they do is they bring out a barrel. It's the Mars Brewery every Friday at noon. For lunch, they bring a barrel and they put it on in the restaurant. They put it down there, and they tap it. It's not refrigerated, and all these. I mean, it's not like beer geeks. It's like these old guys that live in town. And the way it works in Bamberg, and I guess in a lot of places in Europe, is these breweries are kind of like football teams, like soccer teams, and these guys, like, that's their brewery. That's where they go. And these guys are not kids. These are like 50, 60 year old men, and they come to these breweries. And that's their team, and that's where they go. They wouldn't be caught dead at the brewery across the street or down the block. They're not going to go
forbid.
There. No, they're not.
God that's forbid.
No, these are Mars guys, and the guys that go to Spezial, which is like around the corner, basically in Bamberg. Like, those guys would never be caught dead at the Mars Brewery. It's very weird. It's very cool, but it's weird. And they sit in the beer gardens, and they kind of stare straight into space, and they have their tankards of beer. But I was down there, and they put this. huge, huge barrel of beer on the table, and it was real ale, but it was a lager, but it was exactly, the yeast was there. It was wonderful. It was cellar temperature. One of the best beers I've ever had in my entire life. When you think about, like, people, it's like, what's the best beer you've ever had? I think that beer that I had that afternoon at like 12:15, right when they tapped that, it was a Hell's, which is a German golden lager. Basically, it's usually a very boring style when you have it in a bottle, when you have it in America, but it was fresh and beautiful. I mean, I'm thinking about it right now. I'm just getting all goosebumps. I'm just gonna sit back and take a breath.
Ray's wearing leather pants and a leather vest. So you don't think that in Germany they're going to have a American style craft beer bar with like 40 taps and 100 bottles from all over the world?
Maybe in Munich, but certainly not in Bamberg. Bamberg, it's like they're very proud of their beer, very proud. And, you know, I drove around on a bicycle all around the outskirts of Bamberg, and there's all these wonderful little breweries, and they're beautiful, and they're not all good. The beer's not all good. Sometimes it's magnificent. Often it's crap. And I was with Dan Shelton, and he always would say, it's like, excuse me, where's the brewmaster? Your beer is crap. And I'd be like hiding my face. It was
but back when you first opened in 1994, how many other bars were there in the city that had a real good selection of beer on draft, like at least 12 lines of beer?
That's a good question.
Burp Castle on 7th Street, which is near Jimmy's Brewskies 43.
On 7th Street.
Above Jimmy's 43.
Well, there was, you know, it was some bars had good beer on draft, but they had it as a kind of a theme park concept. It was like, you know, come to here and have a beer from every country. Or there was the Erie pubs, the Slaughtered Lamb and all those places. The
Peculiar Pub.
Peculiar Pub, the same thing. They all had this like other concept.
It's like 400 beers, right. You know, Foster's. And
which was part of like when I had to put together that business plan, it was like, let's be forthright. Let's put together a list of great things. And not just beer, but it was also the bourbon and the single malt whiskeys and the tequilas. And let's present it in a really adult way. Let's not like have monsters jumping out of clocks to sell beer. Let's just have, let's let that stuff present itself as it is because it's so good. And that's kind of the concept we stuck with. And it, for some reason, it worked.
Well, you've like, really done it. You know, on my brother's bachelor party, my bachelor party, we went to DBA in Manhattan. That was our first stop.
That's back when we had dancers, right?
The dancers. It was the
we had to take the poles.
It was
out.
The tequila shots by the people at the bar for the guys getting married.
Well, the bartenders at our establishments tend to be fun.
You have a really great place.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So do you, Jimmy.
So tell me about the new thing. This thing you're doing. You're in Brooklyn. You opened a bar in Brooklyn. DBA, Williamsburg.
Well, it's
tell
actually
us where
DBA
it is.
Brooklyn.
DBA Brooklyn. Tell us where it is.
It's right located right off the L train at the Bedford Avenue station between Berry and Wythe on North 7th Street. And we have a number of events that go on there every week. In fact, you can, if you don't get sick of me today, you can actually come every Monday night around 7 o'clock. I have a program called Liquids of Interest.
Liquids of Interest. Liquids, what do you think about interest. That name, Justin?
Sounds good. Sounds good.
What would you be doing with Liquids of Interest?
That's what my girlfriend asked. No, it's basically we explore different beverages. It's not just beer. I maybe I can't talk
she
about
doesn't like
further.
The name? She doesn't like the name of that series?
It's not her choice. It's okay. we have a number of people that come every weekend or every Monday night at 7, and we taste five samples of whatever liquid of interest the folks from the previous week have decided to taste. For example, last night we had small batch bourbon. We had a great turnout for that. This coming Monday, we're having Irish stout. An Irish style stout. So I'm going to throw one or two domestic Irish
style stouts. So what are you going to serve for that tasting?
O'Hara's on draft. And I'm really thrilled about this. We actually got a case of the Guinness Extra Export. I don't know if you know what that is. That's the stuff that gave Guinness the reputation. It was never available in America until like a week or two ago, and I was able to get a case of it.
So we should come by your place next Monday night.
I I recommend it highly.
What time do you start?
7 o'clock.
Seven o'clock.
Monday.
Listen to
Liquids
that.
Of interest, and we'll have the Guinness Extra Export Stout, which is amazing.
For our first show, this was our first segment. We're going to come back in a few minutes with our second segment. We're going to interview Justin Phillips from Beer Table. And I'd like to say thank you for listening to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
Fat like that. You can have all those lean chicks, tender and tall, but when it comes to mean kicks, a big fat mom is the best of all. After I get through working, I reach and grab my hat. Hurry home, don't want.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're going to be on every Tuesday at 5 p.m. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. I'm your host tonight with Ray Dieter from DBA. One of our most special guests that we've ever had on this show, since it's the first show, and I'm happy to have him as our first guest, is Justin Phillips. He is an owner of Beer Table. He used to be work for a very important beer importer in New York called Be United. And Justin, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Jimmy.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Known you for many years with many hats, and we love Beer Table.
Thanks.
So tell us a little bit about why you opened Beer Table and what it means to you, because you really put a lot into that place.
Well, sort of came out of a few different experiences, and it was a little bit backwards, but I had been really seriously interested in wine and working in the wine business in Boston, actually. And that's when I sort of bumped into the Be United folks by accident and got to try a few of their beers. Really for the first time, I never had a problem with beer, but I never really got to try very much. And, you know, I was young and hadn't really gotten into it yet. And some of these things just blew me away. You were talking about Bamberg earlier, and the Schlenkerla beers were among the first things that I ever tried. And of course, I mean, those things are just, you know, just totally out of bounds of what I ever considered beer could be. So I got excited about it, and they offered me a job, and I went to work for them for a few years and got to travel a lot and meet some very interesting folks. And, you know, my job was to travel around and go to different states and visit bars and restaurants and do staff trainings and sort of encourage people to enhance their beer lists. And
you really were working with some of the best beers in the world, weren't you?
Yeah, some really fun stuff. Really diverse portfolio, and it was great.
What were some of the beers besides Schlenkerla that you still remember, you still serve?
There are two that I always think of as the ones that got me into beer. And the first one was the Schlenkerla Märzen or the Erbach, both of those. Second of which was the JW.
Let me interject. Schlenkerla is the smoky beer, right?
Yeah, traditional Rauch beer from Bamberg as well. Same town as Mars and Spezial and all those. so that, and then JW Lee's from Manchester. The Harvest Ale, which is just magnificent and totally, you know, it's hard to believe it's beer the first time you try it, but one of the most dense, super sweet, unctuous desserts you can ever imagine.
What's the oldest JW Lee's you've ever had?
From probably the late 80s, probably 88, something like that.
Wow.
I still have some.
Do you really? That's fantastic.
I do.
Yeah, I have some stuff back to the early 90s that I'm kind of sitting on, but nothing that old. But I love it.
I think I've got a few bottles of 86 left.
Yeah, cool. That was the first year.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So J.W. Lee's.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those were really the first ones just by tasting before ever really getting to travel that got me excited. And then Matthias was generous enough to send me around and got to go see some places, and of course fell in love with the whole thing. And so over time, my wife and I got to try a lot of things, and we eventually felt like, you know, after going to, you know, traditional bar after traditional bar and restaurant, so on and so forth, that for me, it made sense to do a super tiny scale tasting room for beer, a place that, you know, we did table service and we told the stories of the things and where they came from. We always offer tastes of the drafts that we have. We're always changing our list, 25 bottles. It's always rotating. And it's all about a personal experience. So, you know, my ambition is that everything on my list is from a place that I've either been to or I've met the brewers or, you know, I have some close personal relationship with. It's not all true, but that's what I'm aiming for.
Well, we love your place.
Yeah, thanks.
And Beer Table, it's in Park Slope. What's the exact street address and cross-section?
It's on 7th Avenue between 14th and 15th Streets, sort of on the south side of Park Slope.
And do you feel like you're the only really good beer bar out in that area?
There are definitely other good places and more on the way. I from my perspective, and you know, I could be off on this, it still feels like most of the new things that are popping up are sort of traditional pubs, you know, with sort of traditional layouts and, you know, a bar plus seating areas, so on and so forth. And for me, you know, the awkward shape and space and use of Beer Table is what makes it really fun for me.
Well, I love the beer selection that you have and the whole vibe of your place. Let's say tonight, because I'm sure that you know what beer you have on tonight. If I were going to your place tonight, what would be some of the beers that I would get to try?
So a couple of things that are kind of unusual. The first one, I actually brought a sample that we can open, and actually I'm sipping on right now.
This is it?
Yeah, what is it? It's really great.
So the first beer I have on draft tonight is actually a collaboration with this brewery, and it's not actually being imported to the States. It's from a brewery called Revelation Cat, which is in Rome. And he's collaborating with a couple of brewers that are Danish, and they don't have a brewery. So they, I think Dan Shelton's actually importing these. They collaborated. They brewed in Rome. Mikeller is the name of the Danish guys.
Yeah,
we know
Mikeller, right. Yeah.
And so they brewed this beer in Rome called the Mikeller Revelation Cat Cream Ale. So that's what I have on the first line. Not at all what we're drinking right now. What we're drinking right now is a beer that they haven't brought over yet, but it's a sort of a strong IPA that he made the same base beer, about 11%, and then matured it in various different types of wood. This one's matured in acacia. But he's done some other in French oak, American oak, so on and so forth, and was kind enough to send in the suitcase of a traveler a couple bottles for me to try. So just kind of fun for us to get to taste it together for the first time.
I bet you got a lot of beer sent to you to try, and
mostly bad stuff.
Oh yeah,
but it's really fun to get things like this from talented and inventive brewers.
So what about Mikeller? I mean, are there other like nomad breweries out there that don't have a brewery but are making beer?
It seems that way. And, you know, we mentioned Brian from 12% earlier, and there's a guy that he's starting to work with who also doesn't have a brewery. He's here, and he's going to start traveling in Europe and brewing over there at a number of different places, just doing small batch collaborations. His name is Brian Strumke, and his company, I think, is Stillwater Artisanal, something like that. So new stuff from Baltimore that's going to be from all over.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Wow.
And what do you think? I mean, you've been in the business a while. You've been doing beer for, at least 10 years, right? Close to 10 years?
Close to 10 years, you know, yeah.
And
all in.
Did you feel that American
beer
came of age recently? Or do you still think it has a long way to go compared to the European beers?
There are so many super interesting. I mean, I'm really happy to see the Jolly Pumpkin stuff here tonight. I think it's fantastic beer. There are so many things that have been developing in the last decade, definitely before my drinking time, that are, you know, absolutely interesting and world-class breweries. So of course there are a ton of them that, you know, have a long way to go and that are still making, you know, very cliche styles that we see all over the place, and we don't need yet another of the same thing. But you know, regionally sometimes that's appropriate, and it's the right thing to do for the airport bar or whatever, you know. I mean, it's like, that's okay too. So it's just good to see more of it happening, and more just folks out there getting used to drinking good beer that's made with good ingredients, whether or not it's a particularly exciting flavor profile.
Ray, have you been to Beer Table?
Oh yeah, yes I have. Yes I have, and it's great. It's I've had a few nights there. It's been, this stuff's great. It's a very different experience because it's very it's not upscale, but it's beer, total beer immersion.
It's precious. It has
precious.
It's a precious place. It's very special.
I mean, I have joints where people come and they laugh in the joint. You have a place that people like actually go to and pay very close attention to the beer. Like, you don't have shots of tequila going on there.
No.
Which is, it's great. No, I really, it's tiny.
Yeah.
It's a great place. It's a great place to drink beer.
That's, you know, one thing you mentioned, that's one thing that I'm surprised about, and I really like about the place, is that we have a lot of folks that do come and pay attention to it and treat beer as mm-hmm. something really special, but they're not necessarily, for the vast majority, they're not people that knew or cared about beer necessarily beforehand. They come in thinking we're a wine bar, and they start asking about wine, and we start talking about beer. And it's, you know, that's a really fun interchange to, you know, I wasn't trying to, you know, convince wine drinkers to drink beer or anything like that, but it's just really fun to have that interaction, talk about what wines you might be interested in, and then put something in their mouths that they actually do get excited about.
So. Kind of feels like a Belgian beer bar. Like, you're in Belgium, you're in a small town, there's this great little bar with all these beers, and it's the locals are drinking it, not because it's on a pedestal, not because they're beer geeks, they're drinking it because they love the beer, and it's really good.
And it's just all about flavor and just, you know, being excited by, you know, putting something tasty in your mouth.
Hey, you're a winner, man. You've got this. It's like this, the little beer bar that could.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, it's, people talk about it, and I'm happy. Tell us about the other beers that you brought. There's some really good stuff here tonight.
Yeah, I only brought one other, and it just came in today, actually, so I haven't had a chance to try it yet. But, you know, when you asked what's our favorite brewery, this is always one that pops to mind. I still haven't visited, so I feel kind of guilty saying that. But it's called Pico Brewery Alvin, meaning Little Tiny Brewery Alvin. and this is a beer they make. It's their Imperial Stout called Podge. And they're maturing it. I don't know actually how long. I know it's a number of months, probably 7 or 8 or so, in Burgundy barrels. So this will be the first time I've tried it.
Well, let's pop it. Let's taste it. Yeah.
Pass that your way.
Ray, what do you think? I mean, you're out there, you know, you love DBA, you love Jimmy's 43, you love Beer Table. You think there's a lot of new good beer bars opening up that you...
we have a gusher over here.
We'll have to do the play-by-play on this one. And
that lovely bottle of beer that was poured by Justin is just exploded.
Thank you.
I'm a little bit wet now.
And we have... Mops are required. I'm thinking napkins, a change of clothes, maybe some...
Wow. Sorry, guys.
Is this
rubber
aprons? Is this a sporting show or a beer show?
I made sure to shake it well on the way over.
We're going to need some more napkins and paper towels over here.
I think I see folks moving around.
Yes.
Yeah, if there's anyone in any of our listeners who have paper towels or napkins, please come on over.
Run on over.
And we're here at Roberta's in Bushwick. That's the Heritage Radio Network studio is in the backyard of Roberta's. And if you haven't been out here, come out. Roberta's has great fried chicken, great pizza. And they even have, on top of the radio station, there's a rooftop garden. It's a pretty cool place. I was talking to Ben Flannery at the bar this afternoon, and he's one of the leading guys on the rooftop garden movements. And he said he needs more rooftops.
No,
but what if they grew hops? What if all these rooftop gardens, what if we had New York City hops? Who would make beer from New York City hops?
You know, I tried to grow hops.
What do you think?
In the garden in the back of DBA and First Avenue, we have this beautiful old wall that's been there for about 100 years, and we're trying to grow hops, and we didn't have enough sun to do it.
Oh, you need sun.
You need a lot of sunshine. So on a rooftop, I think it makes a lot of sense. You need a lot of sunshine, and they grow to 20 to 30 feet. They're huge.
Wow, and I had no idea.
Yeah, they're huge. We actually grew the hops, and a few local home brewers took what cones we could actually gather from what we grew, but And they made some homebrew, and they brought it in. It was lovely. It was great.
I'm a big fan of hops. I know that.
I actually grow some hops in my apartment as well.
Do you really? Wow.
Fourth floor walk up in the window.
Well, this segment is gonna wind down for a little break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk to Chuck, and we're gonna talk more about hops and growing your own hops. And here we are on Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network, every Tuesday at 5 p.m.
When she was just 5 years old, there was nothing happening at all. Every time she puts on the radio, there was nothing going down at all. Not at all. Then one fine morning she puts on a New York station. You know she don't believe what she heard at all. She started shaking to that fine, fine music. You know her life was saved by rock and roll. Despite all the amputations, you know you could just go out and dance to the rock and roll station. It was all right.
All right.
Hey, baby, you know it was all right.
All right.
Welcome back. Here we are on Beer Sessions Radio, sponsored by the Good Beer Seal, an association of good beer bars in New York City, goodbeerseal.com. We just talked to Justin Phillips from Beer Table, one of our favorite beer bars in Brooklyn. And our co-host tonight is Ray Dieter. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Our next guest is an interesting dude. I met him the other day at Jimmy's Number 43. He's a student of beer. His name's Chuck Duffney. He's got a website called dieseldrafts.com. And I want to ask him a few questions because recently I had a conversation with a real good beer person, and they were like, there's nowhere in America to learn about beer or beer making. There's UC Davis, and then they said there's a school in Chicago which has some collaboration with a school in Germany. And it turns out, Chuck, tell us about the school that you went to and what you learned there.
The school in Chicago is called Siebel Institute of Technology. It's actually America's oldest brewing school and predates Prohibition.
Wow.
Dr. Siebel moved to America. He was a German, and the original classes were actually even taught in German because the whole brewing industry within America at that time was mostly German imports, German immigrants. And the school that I went to is called the World Brewing Academy. People, our listeners, can go to worldbrewingacademy.com to get more information. It's an intercontinental course which spends 7 weeks at Siebel Institute, where it's mostly theory. You know, you're in class from 9 to 5 doing book work. There are some brewery tours, but when at the end of those 7 weeks, we head over to Munich to Dumans Academy, where we do 3 weeks of hands-on practical training, followed by our final, and then 2 weeks traveling around Europe, studying what goes on behind the scenes at different breweries, maltsters, hops traders, and equipment manufacturers.
Unbelievable. Sign me up.
Yeah, it's a
I would
it's a
love
blast.
To go.
It's an amazing trip.
And you're wearing a Cantillon t-shirt.
Yes, this was one of our stops, as a matter of fact. We're drinking some sour beers, talking about sour beers. We were at Cantillon in Belgium. We hit there, and we hit Trifontaine, which is another great Belgian lambic blender. Armand there takes the lambics from around the region, and he'll blend them sometimes just with his own beers. Sometimes he'll blend all 6 breweries into one beer. It was a great experience.
So why did you decide to go to beer school?
I'd been a home brewer for since 1997, so about 1999, since about 11 years now. And my passion for beer just finally drove me to the point where I wanted to dedicate my life and move into it in a professional space. Earlier this year, or about a year ago now, now this 2010, I released some brewing software in an Excel spreadsheet, which is available for free for anybody who wants to use it if they hit up dieseldrafts.com. And after that, I convinced my parents, convinced my friends that this was the path that I needed to take.
That sounds great. Well, while you're at it, we've got Justin here and Ray. Let's take a step back and let's talk more about hops. I was recently, last fall, I was in Holland, and I was given a tour of a local brewery's hop farm. And I actually got to hold the hop. I'd never done that before. And I carried it with me in my pocket all the way back to the States. I don't know if that's illegal. And I tasted some of the hops, and it got caught in my throat. And that was all I knew about hops. But
well, Jim, you know
what
that.
Jimmy, you tell know, me.
The hops
help me
are
out here.
A member
talk to me.
Of the cannabis sativa family. So I don't know how legal it was to bring it back into the country.
They are cousins.
Yeah.
Cousins, wow.
Same family. But, you know, you got away with it. That's good.
But let's talk about growing local hops, because it was just a couple of years ago, the big crisis in the craft brewing industry was that hops were going to be more expensive. Now, was that because they were scarce, or the demand, or that there weren't enough being grown? You know, was it supply and demand? Justin, you know a lot about this. What happened?
It was also climate related, I think. I don't know a whole lot about
that. That's my understanding, too.
Yeah.
It's a really dry year.
There were a number of issues that actually happened that created the initial hop shortage. There was a warehouse fire out in Yakima where all the American hops are grown. There was a hailstorm in, I believe, Slovenia, where some of the noble hops are grown. There was too much rain in England, not enough in Germany. And so everybody got hit with various either catastrophes or agricultural issues at once. And at the same time, there used to be, for the years preceding that, an enormous hop surplus. And so people started cutting back on the land, the acreage that was given to hops. So that combined with, you know, just the inflection point of the market, all of a sudden there was a hop shortage. And
a hop crisis.
Yeah,
but how, if there was a hop crisis, how come we have beers that are more like super hoppy and double IPAs more hoppier than ever?
Because that's thought America. Everyone was we go make, big. We love the creativity here.
I thought everyone was going to make sour beers and wild yeast beers.
That's true. A lot of people are to this day, but America, we love our IPA, especially over on the West Coast. But it seems to be recovering now. Prices are normalizing. Availability is coming back around. I believe Sam Adams did some pretty awesome things where they were offering, they trade in hops futures being such a big brewer, and they were selling off their excess hops to the craft brew community, truly showing that they are, you know, united within this craft brew movement.
Well, that's great. What do you think, Ray? I mean,
does
beer cost more?
You know, it's funny. I think the trend in America with crazy imperial this and triple that, triple IPAs and double IPAs and imperial IPAs. And when I hear about a hop shortage, and it's not that I don't like hops. I think it's time to pull back a little bit and like investigate other kinds of styles. Like you said, Jimmy, you know, the sour beers, the beers with, you know, work with malt, work with the yeast. I mean, yeast brings so much to beer, and people just think it just creates alcohol. It creates a whole wonderful profile to the beer. I wish that there was a backlash of like less hops and more thought into the actual brewing process, because you can throw as much hops into a shitty beer and make it not, you know, a really hoppy shitty beer, and people just want more hops and, you know, bump the alcohol, and people have really high alcohol, high hop beer that's not really made that well. And I think we've all seen that. There's a bunch of them out there. If a hop problem, that's amazing. It's like the apocalypse of hops. Say that three times fast. Hop-apocalypse. I don't know. And, you know, if the repercussions of that kind of an event, you know, creates more creative beer, I'm all for it, frankly. I'd love to see that.
Well, the beers that Justin brought us and the Jolly Pumpkin, I mean, tell us a little more about, what's the name of this beer? It's Pico what?
The name of the brewery is Alvine, Pico Brewery Alvine, and the beer here is Podge. Podge is their take on an imperial stout. Of course, they're using a Belgian yeast strain, so it's really not that like an imperial stout, but delicious, deep, dark, kind of earthy, woodsy, dirty stuff. In this case, they matured matured the beer in some older Burgundy barrels. And I don't know exactly what it was, but of course, Pinot Noir. I assume the barrels were empty, but it's a pretty winey flavor profile.
Yeah, real winey. Like,
it's a lot of raisin.
Juicy, a little tart, I mean, there's definitely like some interesting earthy fruit character there. just slightly tart. I wouldn't call it really sour, but delicious.
I'm guessing that tartness comes from the Belgian yeast strain that they probably use. Mm-hmm.
It makes me a jolly good fellow. We got a great theme song, and I'm going to sing it through the whole show. Well, and Chuck, another thing that there's on your website right now, there's a, what is it? You can do instructions to make a kegerator?
Yes, build your own kegerator. Absolutely. I've built 3 kegerators in my time for my homebrew purposes, but it can be easily modified for anybody who wants to build it for buying kegs from the store. And it's pretty easy to do. It's a lot cheaper than ever buying, you know, a prefab kegerator. And you can upgrade certain components to be better components. So that's one of the more recent blog posts up there on the journal. And if anybody wants to check that out, or if anybody has any questions, I'm always welcome. I always welcome them, and I'm always happy to help.
We were hanging out with Sam Merritt recently. He teaches the Cicerone class on the East Coast. Okay. And he said his most recent class, it's the first time he's had people that really know about beer and beer making. And I said, who are they? And he said, they're homebrewers. And it seems like I above Jimmy's number 43 at Burp Castle, for probably over 20 years, the New York City homebrewers have been meeting. And I know just a few years ago, it was kind of the same guys. They're all great. And then suddenly, about 2 years ago, there were all these 25-year-old guys who knew everything about beer and had all this great energy. And do you see that happening? You see there's a lot of new homebrewers and...
Totally.
Definitely. Lots of people in the class that I just graduated from were actually homebrewers as well. I don't know that there's any homebrewer that doesn't at least idly dream about opening up their own brew pub, you know, opening up their own brewery. It just comes down to balancing your passion versus the money. There isn't a whole lot of money in becoming a brewer, but if you love what you do, that's not what matters.
The New York City Homebrewers Guild, they had this awesome homebrew competition. I think it was their third or fourth year. It was called Homebrew Alley. And I think last year there were 100 entries. This year there are 400 entries. Wow. And that then the New York City area alone, 400 people vying to get the prize. And the prize was that Chelsea Brewery would produce their recipe as a commercial beer.
That's fabulous. There's been a dearth of homebrew shops in the city, and I think there's a couple that have been opening up in Brooklyn recently, so that might be reflective of, you know, all of a sudden New York is starting to get a true homebrew scene that's growing right now.
You know, I never wanted to make beer. I like to drink beer.
And you're a chef, too.
Well, I'm a lazy chef, and I'd be a much lazier homebrewer. I wouldn't clean things.
I homebrewed in the beginning. Before I was a bar owner, I brewed beer, and I was brewing an English-style ale, and I thought, if I can make a beer that's half as good as Fuller's ESB, I'd be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I brewed this beer. I got, like, it was a kit. It wasn't like grain and stuff. It was just an English beer kit, and I brewed it. It was the first time I brewed beer in my house, and I brewed it, and I invited all my friends over, and I brought some bottles of Fuller's ESB in the house so we can compare it, because that was my goal, and I got to say, the beer that I brewed was way better than Fuller's ESB. I'm not bragging. It's just fact.
And well, a lot of British people come over and they remember Fuller's as like this cask ale, real ale that they've had.
Right. Well, no, it was really good. But let me finish the story.
Okay.
So now I'm hooked. Now I'm a home brewer. That's what I'm doing for my living. I'm a home brewer. Like all my friends are like, oh, Ray, go for it. You're a home brewer. Once again, before DBA. So I decided, okay, now I'm going to brew my second batch. What am I going to go for? It's like, I'm going to go for an English old ale. Okay, fine. So I got the English old ale kit, and I brewed it and did my thing, and I made the batch. I invited all my friends over to try my second batch of beer, and they were all like, oh, yeah, we're going to have some good beer tonight.
Woohoo!
Oh, yeah. And the beer was undrinkable. It was the worst swill you could ever have in your life. And I learned a lesson that night, a lesson about sanitizing your equipment.
That's clutch.
Because it turns out that when you brew your first batch of beer, the boogers in the world, the micro boogers, are not present in your brewery until you brew. Once you brew, they're there. So my second batch was totally infected and undrinkable and sour. Like, you know, you could put it was vinegar. You could put it, no, you couldn't even put it on a salad. It was useless. I dumped it out. I brewed a third batch, which was mediocre, and stopped. Then I opened a bar.
Nice. Yeah. Sanitation is, being a janitor is what being a brewer is mostly about.
Absolutely. Sanitation is like everything.
Sanitation's God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Justin? Have you ever brewed your own beer?
Yeah, Trish and I actually brewed a pretty good amount before we opened. Not seriously. I think 1 out of 10 batches was drinkable, and then we stopped. But lately, there have been so many homebrewers coming out to visit, and especially with the two new Brooklyn homebrew just down the street from us. It's great. So we're doing a little homebrewers meetup and do that once a month, and it's exciting to see what lots of folks are doing. My sister just started brewing, and friend
what's
down the street's
name?
growing hops in the backyard.
What's your sister? Jenny.
Yeah.
She's pretty cool.
She's not.
Well, she's you know brewing? What?
She is, yes.
And I have to say that we're getting that signal, and this beautiful evening is winding down. But we're going to go off to raise to DBA in Brooklyn, and we're going to have what? Some is it tonight the stinky? What is it?
Tonight we're having a stinky cheese and beer pairing hosted by Martin Johnson from the Joy of Cheese.
So we're going to go there, and then we're going to go to Jimmy's number 43, and we're going to have some sour beers hosted by the rep from Shelton Brothers. And what's at your place tonight? It's a Tuesday night dinner.
Every Tuesday night.
Tuesday night dinner at Beer Table. So thank you for joining us on Beer Sessions. Beer Sessions has been brought to you by the Good Beer Seal. The Good Beer Seal, raising the bar for craft beer since 2009. Check out the Good Beer Seal website at goodbeerseal.com. And don't forget to email your questions, toasts, and beer lore to us at beersessions@gmail.com. And we will get our expert panel to answer your questions on air, and we'll mention your name. Beer Sessions is produced by Jack Inslee at Heritage Radio Network, engineered by Nat Wiener, with creative producers Jimmy Carboni and Brie O'Connor. That's all for tonight. Tune in next Tuesday at 5 p.m. for Beer Sessions.
Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.